Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. The 2014 calendar year does not begin for another 2.5 months, but the 2014 car model year has been underway for, well, almost all of 2013. That model year incongruity aside, the coming model year does represent some new trends and the return of some old ones. It also has some updates and some brand new models. Lake Effect auto contributor Mark Savage spoke with Dan Harmon about some of the 2014 highlights, beginning with the new Corvette.
The new Corvette, it's the proof that, you know, power and looks are seductive bedfellows. It's a good-looking car. It still looks like a Corvette, but it looks like a more modern Corvette, and I think that's good. They've been milking the current design for two or three generations now easily, and it was time for some changes. So, it looks more sleek. It looks more modern, a little edgier than Corvettes have been in the past, but at its heart, it's still, you know, this big, giant engine. You know, it's got a 6.2-liter V8. Gets about 450 horsepower. They say 0 to 60 in 3.8 seconds. So it is still the muscle car, the performance car, but with a more modern interior. Everybody has been complaining for years that the Corvette is this pricey car with a lousy interior on it. And I think some of that was justified, but it wasn't horrible. I thought it was a very comfortable interior. It just probably had a little more of an old man look to it.
Well, speaking of that, are they trying to shake the midlife crisis image?
I don't know if they're trying to shake that image, but I think like Cadillac, they're trying to bring it down, you know, to the mid-40s level where people might be able to afford it still.
And still have a midlife crisis.
And still have a midlife crisis. But I don't know. The problem with any nameplate that's been around a long time is that people get used to that and it's hard to change what's already been. And do people want that to be a coupe instead of a real sports car? And I think they've stuck with the sports car end, and I think that's probably a wise move on their part. So, you know, they've got some other goodies in there. They have something they call Drive Mode Select. You can pick 12 different performance settings and different things you can adjust on it. I think that's probably what's needed at a $60,000 plus car. To make people feel justified in paying that price, I doubt you'll use more than two of those settings ever unless you're taking it out on a racetrack. But okay. It's a good-looking car, and I haven't driven it yet. I can't wait. But
make sure you stop by.
I will keep you on my list.
All right. So we're talking about 2014 models, and some of it is carryover, and there's actually quite a bit of new designs coming on the scene.
Right. There are a whole lot of things and everything from, like Cadillac has their new CTS coming out, which is another very edgy-looking vehicle. I think Cadillac's done a nice job of transforming their looks and so forth. This is what they would call their 5 Series fighter for BMW. It's that midsize car that, a lot of people want to buy and get into if you're, a luxury and performance car buyer. And Cadillac with CTS, amongst others, has been pushing that performance envelope with bigger engines and so forth. The other thing that Cadillac has is the ELR coming out, which is the, Volt makeover to make it look edgier and like a Cadillac. And so it will be interesting to see if that catches on with the Cadillac crowd. I mean, it's a good-looking car. Again, I think the Volt's a nice-looking car. But again, this is not exactly a hybrid like we think because it's a car that has a gas engine that powers things, but it basically powers the battery, so you're always working on electric power. So that'll be interesting. And then there's – I know you and I talked a little earlier, the Corolla, which is one of the bigger-selling cars out there.
Yeah, pretty radical redesign for that.
And really a much radical redesign for that with a kind of a rounded roof line and a more chiseled – nose and tail to it. So it gives it – I don't think people are going to look at it and go, oh, just another Corolla. I think they will notice the styling on it. And this is, again, Toyota has been working the last 3 or 4 models that they brought out with a much more stylistic look to them.
And on the interior as well. They've really revamped the dash. So it's not the boring green anymore, the boring orange.
Which anything would be an improvement at this point, I think, it's been way too long since they've touched that. But I think they also probably wisely learned from Honda when they brought out their Civic and they didn't do too much to make it new and then had to redo it again within a year to come out with another new version because people were dissatisfied because, you've seen things like the Chevy Cruze come out and the Ford Focus. and they have a more interesting-looking styling and a more interesting-looking dash, and it just feels more modern. I'm sure they had a lot of economies of scale keeping that interior on the Corolla the same for, 18, 20 years, something like that. I mean, you know, yes, they made tweaks, but nothing major. I mean, there were still door handles and window buttons and stuff that look exactly as they did 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, well, if it works.
If it works. I mean, right. You know, there's the if it's not broken, don't fix it. But every once in a while when I spend $15,000, $20,000, I want to get something that looks new.
Although you have an older Toyota.
Yes.
Does it bother you that your car has older technology and features?
I guess it does sometimes. My wife drives our Camry much more than I do, but I get in it, and of course I'm always in new vehicles, but when I get into that, it's like 12 years old now, so it feels pretty old.
It fits like a glove, though,
but it fits like a glove, and it keeps running, and we're well over 100,000 miles now.
All right. Well, just back briefly to luxury cars, I just wanted to ask you about the 2014 Mercedes CLA, which not only is sort of, well, for Mercedes, quite radical redesign, but to me, the most radical part is it's a front-wheel drive car, which to me is shocking.
It is shocking, and I'm not exactly sure what drove that for them, other than there's so many front-wheel drive cars kind of at the lower end of the luxury, you know, market. But it is a departure for them, and they've kind of brought more of their styling that they've had on other cars of recent release to it. So I think it's an interesting-looking car. I know you prefer the boxier looks, but this is very aerodynamic. They tell us it's got like the lowest drag coefficient of any sedan out there now. So great for them, and maybe that'll get us a little bit better gas mileage and so forth. But, styling is in the eye of the beholder, but I like the fact that they're doing something at least a little different with the looks.
Still, though, I mean, what I always liked about Mercedes, or used to, I don't know if is that they were simple. The cars were clean, austere, not a lot of creases and curves and junk on it. And the interiors were the same way. They were very well laid out, very simple, very easy on the eyes. But just from what I've seen on this one so far, very curvy, lots of edges, the interior. I think we're back to a lot of buttons, yeah. It looks like, for me. So it's
curvy is in definitely on the exteriors these days. And I think that the problem is that we all want so many features in our cars these days, especially electronics, that the buttons have just gone crazy. And I think I think the top I've counted was 64 or 5 buttons on a dash of a car, which is just insane to me. So many of them, like BMW, go to the iDrive system where they've got the little knob that you can turn and go through everything. And I think that's – certainly they've made it easier than it used to be, but it is so – hard to use something like that while you're driving. You know, at a stoplight, maybe you can tune something in. But the fact that we used to be able to press 6 buttons and get some radio stations, and that was easy, and you could just kind of glance over that way, hit the button and go. I just had a Lincoln MKZ, very nice driving car. I think it's a pretty good looking car too. But again, with the touchscreen everything, and some of that they've actually gotten to be easier, but now this one had the volume and the climate controls on a little sliding scale, and you had to hit at the end of a little metal piece on your dash, but you had to hit just above it, and you either hit it and it moved or you didn't, and so you're sitting there constantly trying to fiddle with that thing to get it where you want it to go. And to me, I couldn't tell the difference between the radio and the climate control until after 3 or 4 days. You know, you're just punching buttons, and all of a sudden I've turned something on I didn't want to turn on. And I just think that automakers need to ask themselves what is intuitive and what is simpler for the driver, because a passenger can always find the right buttons.
Yeah, that's true. You need to bring your own co-pilot.
Yes, you almost always have to have somebody else in the car with you to tune in radio and the climate control systems.
All right. Well, there are two cars I want to talk about together because they're basically the same owner, which are Fiat owns Chrysler and Jeep. So one of them is, again, a pretty radical departure from the previous model, which is they're replacing the Liberty with the Cherokee and making it a unibody, I believe, which, again, is pretty radical.
Yes, it is pretty radical for them, and it's actually a Fiat chassis again that they've borrowed to use this for the Cherokee. You know, Cherokee was a big name for Jeep for many years, and that's one reason they're bringing it back. They still have the Grand Cherokee for the luxury end of the market. This one still has the bars in front like a Jeep grill, but I think there's 7 instead of 5. And so Jeep people, I guess, are a little perturbed by that. But I've seen it, and I haven't driven that one yet either, but I have seen it, and it is, I think, a really attractive crossover. I don't want to call it a real Jeep or a truck or a Ute or whatever, because I think it's really more of the crossover, again, trying to aim for the family that really wants a station wagon, but the station wagon's too fuddy-duddy, so now we've got to have a crossover. But it's got very narrow, thin lights in the front, a lower hood line, and I think it's a real attractive vehicle, so I'll be interested to see if it drives as well as it looks.
Well, that's my big concern or question is that if you've driven a Jeep Liberty, you sit up high and it feels like a truck and it's just solid. So how can a new design that is not even close to that replicate it? Aren't they going to be offending some people that really want a real Jeep?
You know, they may be, but I think what they realize is the market, most people don't want a real Jeep because they're bouncy and they are square and they're not real comfortable to be in. And if you want to take it off-road, a Wrangler is still available in both two-door and four-door. So I think they've covered that part of the market. If I want a Jeep, but I want it to be more upscale, I guess then that there is a problem because you're going to have to go to that or the Grand Cherokee to get it. And, you know, four-wheel drive and off-road vehicles are great. But only 2% of the people even buy them take them off-road. So how much do you need it to be that tall and have, you know, 12 inches of ground clearance instead of 8? Not many people do. And most Jeeps ride like a truck, and they are bouncy, and they clop along, and you hit, you know, the rough roads that we have around here, which are pretty horrible most of the time, and you feel like you're driving on the moon. And I think most people like something a little bit smoother than that, and that's – you know, what they go to eventually.
Well, the other part of that is this has been tried with Jeep, with the Compass and the Patriot, and doesn't seem like those did all that well. So are they going to make the same mistake a third time?
They were pretty bad, and I'm hoping that this one definitely has a better transmission. The CVT that was in the Compass and so forth were pretty mediocre. And I'm hoping that they've learned their lesson. I think the fit and finish will probably be at least dramatically better on this. And it does look better. So, you know, will it drive better? Time will tell. They've put some time and effort and money into this. I think they've actually slowed down the launch of this a little bit. So I'm assuming they're trying to get it, you know, adjusted so it is really a nice vehicle when it comes out. So I'm hopeful. And like I say, I'm going on looks only at this point. But I think it will be a very nice vehicle. It just will not be a Jeep Liberty, which also, by the way, got really horrible gas mileage. So I'm guessing this will get much better.
That is very true. All right. Well, the other car in the Fiat Chrysler Jeep family is the 500L, the larger – I'm not even sure I can call it a larger version of the 500 because it looks quite different.
It looks quite different. The 500 is really a mini car to me. The 500L is 27 inches longer. So we're talking – darn near 3 feet in my brain, you know, 2.5 feet anyway, longer. And so you're going to have more room for people in the back seat. You're going to have more cargo room. And I'm sure the wheelbase has been stretched out a little bit. So it's going to ride a lot better. Although I got to say the 500 was one of the more surprising cars to me for its ride because for that small a car, it actually rode pretty well. This is also, I believe, like 6 inches taller. So you're going to have a lot more headroom, which I know was a problem for some tall folks in the 500. You know, you might like it, but you had to get the convertible version so you could put the roof down and fit your head in there. It's also made in Serbia, which I may be the only car that will be sold in the U.S. that we could say is made in Serbia. So all our Serbian friends out there will be happy to be able to buy something.
Pretty slick plant.
Yes. It's all brand new over there too and looks great. And this is, again, where Fiat, I think, has stepped up their quality over the last couple of years with some new plants and better facilities to build these things in.
And I want to get back to the luxury market just for a moment, which is the BMW 4 Series. And was there something wrong with the 3?
I guess only the number because they're renumbering. It was the 3 Series. Now it's the 4 Series. The Coupe, I believe, is out first. And it will have a couple of engine choices again, like I think it's 240 horse for their turbocharged 2-liter. And then it's about 300 for the 6-cylinder 3-liter that they have. You know, it looks like a 6 Series but shrunk down a little bit, and I don't think that's a bad thing because I think the 6 Series is a very attractive car. So I think that will be a good thing for them. It also has an 8-speed transmission, which actually we've seen in a few of the Fiats and Chrysler products lately too. what that does is get you better fuel economy, and the shifts are almost unnoticeable in some of these cars now with the automatics. And, you know, I know we've talked about manual transmissions before, and it's fun to drive those. I have one right now on a Challenger here. But the automatics that they've got are so smooth and so easy to drive now that they get better gas mileage than the manuals do. So that's kind of interesting too. But if you're buying a BMW, I suppose you're quite as concerned about the gas mileage and so forth as maybe those of us who might buy the Corolla.
Are they going to have a diesel on this model?
They haven't announced one that I'm aware of, but I certainly think that's a possibility. A turbo diesel in there would make some sense.
Well, thanks, Mark. I look forward to our next drive.
All right. Hopefully it'll be in a 2014.
All right. Take care.
Mark Savage writes about cars for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, plus his own website, and he is editor of American Snowmobiler magazine, published by Waukesha's Kalmbach Publishing. He is also our regular automotive contributor, and he talked with Dan Harmon about the 2014 model year. One last break, and when we return, we'll meet the Milwaukee writer Tom Beal, whose new book is a short story collection called Badlands. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.